the roll.
Chair Hudson.
Here.
Representatives Broder.
Here.
Comby. Cruz. Diaz. Gates. Hill. Magar. Moskowitz.
Here.
Murphy.
Here.
Richardson. Schwartz. Wood. Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lisa. With the quorum being present, welcome everyone to Healthcare Appropriations Land. Please make sure you turn off any cell phones and so forth that might make any noise. I will take a page from Chair Oliva's mention yesterday. If you happen to be the last remaining soul in the universe to actually have a pager, please turn it off and then submit it to the Smithsonian. They're looking for an 80s technology booth. Members, today we're going to hear a presentation from the Department of Children and Families, and we're also going to hear a bill by Representative Berman. And so to kick things off, we're going to have CS for HB 159, the Establishment of Mental Health First Aid Training Programs by Representative Berman. Representative Berman, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. CS for HB 159 requires the Department of Children and Families to establish a mental health first aid training program that equips the public with the necessary skills to identify and understand the signs of mental illness and substance use disorders. The bill's aim is to identify and get help for persons who may be in crisis. Training will be offered by behavioral health managing entities or other community providers. The contracting entity must work with local school districts to give public school staff first priority for training. DCF will provide the guidelines for the course requirements and is required to send a report on the program's effectiveness to the governor and legislature by December 2016. The bill provides an effective date of July 1, 2014 and an expiration date of June 30, 2017. And that is the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Berman. There's an amendment. You want to present your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill provides a non-recurring sum of $300,000 from the Federal Grants Trust to the Department of Children and Families to implement the provisions of the Act.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions on amendment number one? Members, questions on amendment number one? Okay. Is there any public testimony on the amendment? We have two registered speakers. I don't know if they're for the bill or for the amendment. If you want to speak to the amendment, come on up. Karen Cook or Brian Pitts, were you on the amendment or were you on the bill? Okay. Excellent. Anyone else from the public wishing to speak on the amendment? Seeing none. Members, is there any debate on amendment number one? Any debate on amendment? None. Is there any objection to the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted without objection. Okay, we are now back on the bill as amended. Are there questions on the bill? Members, any questions on the bill? Representative Hill for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a great bill. The only question I have, is there a department or agency that is providing these services now?
And you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Hill. There are different bits and pieces throughout the state who do provide some mental health. We do have managing entities. They do some things, but nobody is specifically doing this mental health first aid training, and there is not as much awareness and of this issue as much. And this bill will bring, will spread. It's sort of, you train the trainers, so you will have people who are trained, and then they go out in the community. And then it will all, and part of their job also is to make appropriate referrals to the places where the actual treatment is taking place.
Any other questions? Yep, Representative Schwartz for a question. Oh, nope, no question. Representative Magar for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a small question. Is substance use disorders same thing as substance abuse disorders?
And you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it is, and I will go through and make sure that's clear in the bill. We may be doing, Mr. Chair, I've been working with Representative Wood, and we may be doing some amendments in the next committee having to do with the implementation of this program, and we will look at that issue also to make sure it's clear. Thank you.
Any other questions, members? None? Okay. We have a couple of members of the audience that wish to testify. First up, we have Karen Cook. Waving in support. Excellent. Next up, we have Mr. Brian Pitts.
Thank you very much. Brian Pitts, Justice Jesus. This particular measure here, you added an amendment, because I'm not here to talk about substantive stuff, of course, because this Appropriations Committee. So we got $300,000 in grant. And how's that being broken down, giving it to DCF? Was it three? Because that analysis mentions, you know, 2,000 per. You go to page 5. At best, 25 students based on the first day USA concept. Then it talks about at best 50 grand. So we have, what, 6 times that amount. So again, the question becomes, what is the breakdown of the 300 grand that you're giving to DCF, which we. You don't want to give unbridled discretion to an entity. But with DCF, we definitely want to watch the money since we're still having problems with debt agency. Next, is it coming out of the proper trust fund? Because with Fed dollars, remember, it's supposed to be used only for that specific purpose only. And that's why it's in a separate trust fund and why it's titled Fed. So it must fit with a program that matches this. So it's not coming out of GR or a regular agency trust fund, DCF trust fund. It's coming out of the federal grant trust fund. So that means it has to come from that trust fund as required, according to a particular program concerning the guidelines. And I hope that's the right trust fund. Next, the discretion of DCF or the contractor that they pick for the program. So they got 300 grand to use as they see fit with no criteria. As the sponsor said, DCF will set up the guidelines. So you're not. So is that also saying they're going to have to implement rules? Because usually that's what happens. If they set up guidelines, you give them general parameters, and then they have to set up rulemaking. In that case, if that's what's being said, then there's no rulemaking authority given in the bill for this particular program, which usually is required. The general statute would not do, because this is a specific, limited time-sensitive program. So you would have to give them special rulemaking authority in the language for that, which that then would cost money. FAC, public notices, who knows how many times it'll go through. Of course, they got to do it by 2018. With that, my greatest concern then falls back on the 300 grand. If you need no more than 50,000, so the next thing is how many places are they doing it throughout the state? I'm not getting the picture on the dollar sign here. But with that, you know, I'm going to go ahead and close, and I bring that to your attention because this committee is supposed to consider really just that. How's the 300 grand being spent? Third time I'm seeing it in a different way to the Appropriations Committee, who deals strictly with health issues. You know, money in health is very limited. 300 grand still means something. I don't care what trust fund is coming from. Health care appropriations you deal with. Where's the 300? Fourth time, where's the 300 grand being used? Versus it being used somewhere else from this same federal trust fund. Now, does this program now, 300 grand nevertheless, need to really be done concerning other priorities you must spend money on in health care appropriations? Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify? Okay. Members, is there any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Wood, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Berman, for bringing this bill forward. And I think it's important that we recognize the importance of money in implementing programs, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for finding a recommendation of $300,000 for this for this new program. I am certainly supportive of this initiative. I do think, though, that, and Representative Berman, I think, agrees that we need to kind of fine-tune the implementation language so that we get the the desired impact of the program, I plan to help her make sure that we bring a good product to the HHS committee, and I'm looking forward to that effort. So thank you very much.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Bourbon, for bringing this. It's one of those areas that just absolutely needs to be addressed, and thank you, Chair Hudson, for hearing this bill and helping with the finances. Thank you.
Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Berman, for bringing this good bill forward. I can't help but think about this training being provided perhaps to some junior high school or even elementary teachers where they could learn to assess a risk for a young student and maybe make a difference in one of our schools and some of what we see happening. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Anyone else wishing to debate? Okie dokie. In that case, Representative Berman, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing this good, for allowing this good bill to go to your committee and for the appropriation discussion. I do take very seriously our taxpayer dollars, and we will assure that the funding is handled in the best use. And I also take very seriously that we have huge problems in the state concerning mental health and substance abuse. And we want to do what we can to start to address those problems. And I think this good bill will work on that problem. So thank you all, and I hope to have your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Berman. Having closed on the bill, Lisa, please call the roll.
Chair Hudson?
Yes.
Representatives Broder?
Yes.
Combi? Cruz?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Gates?
Yes.
Hill?
Yes.
Magar?
Yes.
Moskowitz? Murphy?
Yes.
Richardson?
Yes.
Schwartz?
Yes.
Wood?
Yes.
Bill passes.
Sounds like a winner to me, Representative Berman. It passes. Well done. Okay, members. Next up, we're having a presentation from the Department of Children and Families to discuss a report that was done called the Child Fertility Trend Analysis Report. And that sounds not particularly riveting, I'm sure, to some, as we start talking about data analysis and so forth. However, I think what you will see with this presentation today is the power of data analytics and collection to be able to really be a tool for us to move forward with policy-making decisions. Before us today, we will have Peter DeGree, the Assistant Secretary of Operations for DCF, who will do the initial presentation and introduce two other gentlemen that, or a couple other folks that will be with us today to discuss the report in greater detail. Now, members, I will tell you that this report came out January the 6th. You may or may not have seen this report. I can tell you I did not see this report until just a little while ago. I don't often make a point of surfing the DCF website, as I'm sure many of you don't spend a lot of time surfing websites to look for new links to things. But I found this and felt it was important that you have the opportunity to see it. It, frankly, is a little disturbing to me that DCF did not bring this to us and did not present it to us, because I think this is important data and, more importantly, very illustrative of where we might be able to go in the future for not just this appropriations area, but other appropriation areas as we look at data analytics. And so with that, with a mild chastising, I present to you Mr. Peter DeGree.
Thank you, Chair Hudson, and thank you, committee members, for receiving this report today. I'm joined today by Albert Blackman, who's sitting right over here. He's the SAS lead scientist on this project, and Ms. Sonia Doucette, who is the North Highland Project Manager. This project was initiated by Interim Secretary Jacobo, who directed that we use the tools of predictive analytics to find a way to prevent child fatalities. We went through a competitive process to get a highly qualified company to do this, and North Highland and SAS were selected. The contract amount was $115,000. What they did is they analyzed the entire database in our FISFIN system of child deaths and as well as public health vital statistics and other sources of all child deaths related to abuse and neglect from January 1st, 2007 to June 30th, 2013. This involved a total of 873 protective investigations and approximately 3,000 deaths of children. And what they were looking for is to find those factors that were most predictive of severe danger of fatality of children who were reported to the child welfare system. SAS will be elaborating on the report using the PowerPoint that's on the screen briefly, but the report shows a number of really, really potent findings. Number one, it documents the power of in-home care and providing intensive services to parents to correct their problems. Secondly, it really focuses attention on the younger children, infants and toddlers. About 90% of all the deaths are kids 0 to 3. And third, it really highlights the fact the extreme danger of children who have been victimized by sexual abuse, physical abuse, and children with disabilities, and particularly those children who are in families characterized by addictions and family violence. So what we've done with the information in this report is we've taken a number of actions where you have that mix of limited family protective capacity due to drugs and violence and extreme child vulnerability to being very young, being very disabled, and being abused. We've developed a better way of getting our substance abuse providers to write their information right into FISFIN so the CPIs and the case managers are kept up to date at all times. We implemented a safety plan system where CPIs cannot close a case unless they give the case to a case manager, full case management ownership, if the safety plan is necessary. We implemented a program, a new approach to quality assurance called Rapid Safety Feedback, in which for cases that meet, a sample of cases that meet these criteria of very vulnerable young disabled children and other children in families where there are drugs and where there's violence are constantly being reviewed by our quality assurance people and corrective action is taken. We've also brought forward a proposal for this most vulnerable population to follow the law enforcement model and use paired child protective investigators when these cases are being investigated. So we get two sets of eyes on each and every one of these cases. And there's a lot of them, about 20,000 a year, 20,000 investigations a year would fit this portfolio. There's much to be done. North Highland and SAS basically looked at our FISFIN system, as I said, at vital statistics, and at our child death registry that we have. But more could be done in terms of really integrating that data with criminal justice data, with ACA's healthcare data, particularly now that we have the child welfare specialty managed care plan, our own access data, our welfare data, educational data. In each of these domains, there's flags for children that are extremely vulnerable. So we hope this is just the beginning. We'd like to move to real-time predictive analytics and multiple databases in capturing and identifying those kids most at risk and most vulnerable so we can respond to them. Unless you have some immediate questions to me, I'd like to introduce Mr. Albert Blackman to present the real specific findings of the report.
Members, any questions thus far? I think you can probably tell from the cursory overview that what we're talking about here has some pretty good potential. And if you've flipped ahead in your presentation, you'll see that there's some powerful findings here. There's a lot of things we deal with in healthcare appropriations, but I would argue that one of the most important things we deal with are the lives that are in the care and custody of the great state of Florida. And so it's important that this information is absorbed and is used appropriately. Sir, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pete, thank you. Fellow committee members, thank you as well. Again, as Pete said, my name is Albert Blackman. I'm a data scientist with SAS. I was the lead analyst on this project and took a look at the data that Pete has mentioned, and I'm here to share with you some of the findings within this report. So the slide you're looking at right now has quite a bit of information on it. There are two main things that I want you to walk away with. The first is that the bars that are in red, those are the risk factors to children that actually increase the odds of a child experiencing a tragedy. One in particular I'll highlight is the prior removal due to a parent drug or alcohol abuse scenario. This may be a situation of neglect where a parent may have been under the influence of drug and a child experienced some form of neglect and ultimately experienced a tragedy. The multiple of this bar shows that a child is 14 times more likely to experience a tragedy if they have a prior removal due to apparent drug or alcohol abuse. Those red bars are takeaway number one. The second thing I'll highlight are the bars in green, and I believe Pete had already mentioned this, particularly the total prior in-home services that DCF is providing. Those in-home services can have the power to reduce a child's probability of a tragedy by 90%. These are interactions with folks from DCF. These are programs. Generally, it's working. It's reducing that probability that's there. Those are the two main takeaways I want you to have from this slide. Now, this particular analysis utilized three data sources. You'll see that in the top left portion. FISFN, which of course is the Child Welfare Case Management System. We had the Child Protection Hotline data, and then of course the Child Death Review Database that Pete mentioned as well. It's a good start. But I also want to make a very, very, very important point. During our project, the agency identified 24 total data sources that could be integrated to provide a holistic view of a child's total welfare. Some of those data sources are already within the agency, one of which I'll point out is the substance abuse and mental health issue. If you remember the previous slide and the impact of a prior removal due to a parent's drug or alcohol abuse, reducing that factor of 14 is obviously very, very important. And this particular database would allow us to do that. Going outside the walls of DCF, the Department of Corrections data, as we all know, the substance abuse and mental health data only covers those that receive services from the state. So including Department of Corrections, parole boards, drug courts type date would help us, again, to paint that holistic picture of what's actually going on with the child. From what you've seen and from the report that's in front of you, I would offer that there's a pretty clear path forward. There are 24 data sources that have been identified that can provide a comprehensive view of what's going on in the life of a child. This report is merely beginning to paint that picture. It paints a picture of what's going on, what are the major risks that children face day in and day out that increase their probability of a tragedy. But it also shows those positive things that are helping those children, that are helping to move them forward and give them a better life. And I would offer that with the state integrating the data that's available, analyzing that data, and making sure the appropriate people see that data to make good decisions will ultimately help the children of Florida. Thank you very much.
Members, questions? Representative Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. If you can go back to the slide number two, looking at the first red bar, I see prior removals due to sexual abuse, and then it says the removals due to sexual abuse increase the odds of the child's death by a multiple of 67. So what I'm trying to understand is the values to the left margin of this that says it's like the red bar goes to about 4.25. So are you saying it's 4.25 removals from the home? Is that what I'm seeing?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chairman. So the particular model that we used, that is an actual parameter estimate. It's just over 4.25. But we wanted to make sure that what that translates into is a multiple of 67, increasing the child's odds of death.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So you're saying that a child would have been removed from their home 4 times for sexual abuse? Is that what you're saying, back and forth in and out of a home?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
In the particular model that we used,
okay,
the value of the risk factor within just the mathematics of the model would be approximately 4.25. We'll call it that. What that 4.25 translates into with doing a mathematical operation is a multiple of 67 times more likely to experience a tragedy. So it's not a matter of going in and out of the home. It's actual measure of, just if I were to take a general child from the population and they have a prior removal due to a sexual abuse, that would multiply their odds by 67 of experiencing a tragedy.
All right, Mr. Chair. So
one second. So, because now you've got me kind of twisted here, and I think we're both on the same page here. I've got one kid. One kid has had a prior removal from a home because of sexual abuse. That equates to that child, that same child, having a 67 times greater chance of death than a child that had not been removed for a sexual abuse issue. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. From the data we had analyzed, that's the relationship that exists. Yes, sir.
Wow.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was – Representative Cruz, for your follow-up now, I just want to make sure we're in sequence.
Actually, it's, I'm moving on to another question just so that I can try to understand this. I'm seeing that total prior and home services goes to a negative value, a minus two, but I don't understand how in-home services reduces a child's odds of death by 90%, but it falls into a negative value. Can you explain that to me?
So that same mathematical operation takes us to a value less than one, which means that if you multiply a number times a number less than one, it reduces the risk factor. So that's why that negative number translates into reduced risk. This was quite an exercise in data visualization, I apologize, but we tried to show the green are the things that are helping, and red is the actual risks that are involved.
Okay. And members, I might remind you, he introduced himself as a data scientist, okay? And, you know, no offense, Mr. Blackman, but we are much more of the accounting ledger side of things, okay?
Yeah.
And so oftentimes, you know, math with letters starts to get a little confusing for many of us. So please try and, you know, bring it into terms we can come to. Representative Cruz, did you have another question?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Richardson, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to the question that Rep. Cruz was asking, because I'm trying to understand the proportionality on the chart. So if you take the very first one that has a 67 times more likely, and then I look at the bar chart next to it that is 17, so 17 times is about a quarter of 67. So why is it that the bar is not much smaller, because I'm trying to understand why the bars are sized the way they are.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The mathematics is not linear. It's exponential in mathematical terms. So it's not just a matter of 17 being approximately a quarter of 67. It's much more exponential relationship, which is why the parameter estimates don't immediately translate into something that's directly proportional. Trying to provide a simple example of that. But that's the mathematical answer to that, is it's not just a simple matter of being additive. It's actually multiplicative.
Follow-up, Representative Richardson?
Not on this one, but a different question.
How about it?
Thank you. Did any of your analysis get into the differences, measurements between a DCF PI investigation versus an investigation by the Sheriff's Department?
You recognize?
Thank you. No, sir, it didn't.
The data that you had, was it comprehensive for all incidents, regardless of being Sheriff and or CPI, or was it segregated data?
The universe consisted of all children that had been what we called kind of had interacted with the agency, whether that was a hotline call all the way through where there was actually some sort of investigation or a more deeply interested interaction with the agency, if that makes sense. There was a lot more going on. That was kind of the universe of children we considered from the beginning of 2007 to the middle of 2013.
Representative Richardson, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so I understand, you say the data that was available in the agency. So would an investigation by the Sheriff's Department, because I understand there are about six counties that do investigations in that way, would that data be part of the information that's available at DCF?
I don't know. I can check into that for you.
The answer is yes. It would have been. And frankly, you're in.
Please step up to the microphone so everyone can hear you.
It would be totally possible to go back and look at the data from the perspective of sheriffs versus CPIs and break it out that way, because it did include all investigations, including the ones the sheriff does. They're also tracked in the FISFID system.
Follow up?
Yep.
Thank you. I would very much appreciate if we could go back, since the data are available, if we could go back and look at that. It's my understanding that there has not been any analysis on this since this effort has been privatized. So I would like to have that analysis. So since the data are available, I'd very much appreciate it if we could do that. Do you know if that would involve a lot of work, or is that something we could do relatively easily?
Representative Richardson, it would probably necessitate a new contract and or some appropriation to be able to do that, I would think. So, Representative Schwartz for a question.
Thank you so much. I also want to thank you, Chair Hudson, for always presenting such interesting things that otherwise we'd not have any access to.
I live to serve. Hmm? Never mind. Go ahead.
Thank you. No, truly. And this really amazes me, because when you have a question of what does government do and what are we funding, and to have something as important as this being done by DCF, you know, reinforces my belief that good government is really at work here in Florida. I would like to know a little bit more about the background of this study, and that is the name of the company you're with. It's a research company, and your role, and a little bit about you and how your company operates with these kind of, whether you've done studies like this in the for other states.
And you're recognized, and if you want to bring up Ms. Sonia Dossett as well, if she wants to add any insights into this, since there were two companies involved. Mr. Blackman, why don't you go first and tell us a little about yourself, who you are, what you want to be when you grow up, and where you work.
Sure. Thank you. So, again, my name is Albert Blackman. I'm a data scientist with SAS, and SAS is an analytical software company, and we provide analytical solutions for 90 of the Fortune 100 companies, and our software is designed to handle data, whether that's data management or to perform advanced statistical analysis, which are some of the results you see here today. We partner with state and local governments quite often, and a particular child welfare examples that I can offer is within L.A. County, we have efforts there exploring outcomes for children within their child welfare system. And another that I'll mention is we're also doing work in Virginia around providers. So state paying providers and looking at the risk-adjusted dollars that are going to these providers. And of course, what does that mean? If I'm paying provider A $1, am I getting the same value as the dollar I'm paying to provider B? It's a particular project that's going on in Virginia right now. Particularly about me, I graduated from North Carolina State University with undergraduate in mathematics and economics, and then I actually have a master's in advanced analytics. And I've been with SAS now for 3 years, and I've worked on a number of state and local government projects.
Welcome, Ms. Dossett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sonia Dossett, and I work for North Highland. We do a lot of project management work, both in public and private sector. The Tallahassee office does a lot of work here with DCF as well as other government agencies. And as far as my background, I went to the University of Southern Mississippi, and I have a double major in international economics and foreign languages.
Representative Schwartz, any follow-up question? Because otherwise I've got a few others that would like to ask questions. Okay, we're rolling on then. Representative Diaz for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Blackman, you had mentioned that ideally you would integrate data from 24 different sources. Is that something that you've done elsewhere? And if so, what has been the outcome of that large a data pool?
You recognize?
Thank you. The two projects that I mentioned, one being in L.A. County, was a large effort as far as data integration, and the project in Virginia looking at the risk-adjusted dollars were both large efforts. And the outcomes were just like many data integration experiences. We worked with agencies to establish MOUs that may not have had them in place and pull them into one central source with all privacy considerations kind of taken into account.
Okay, Representative Broder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that you had worked on a number of other government projects, and so I'm fascinated by the unlocking the data piece that, even though this is very multifactorial, it seems like there's a lot more data that we could have access to that we don't. Let me give you a hypothetical, and you may not know the answer to this, but I think it would be valuable for the follow-up question, if I may. If let's say Representative Cumbie and I are having a domestic dispute, both over 18 years old, and law enforcement pulls up to the house, would they be able to have the kind of data that you're seeking elsewhere to get kind of a more full picture about what could be going on in history, whether that's clearly there would be Department of Corrections information, but would there be other things available to law enforcement that might help paint that picture? And if so, would that be helpful to child protective investigators if they could get that full picture as well?
And you're recognized.
Thank you. I think that's an excellent example and an excellent hypothetical, because that's as a data scientist, that's the world that I find very comforting, is when an someone from the agency pulls up, they have a fully comprehensive view of what's going on with the child and other members that are part of the household. That kind of information right now, just within the three data sources that we analyze, obviously we're very child-centric, so having that full view is going to build that holistic picture and allow those folks to make much better decisions.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Nope. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go back to the chart again. I'm kind of fascinated by what I'm seeing here. Where it lists physical disability indicator with a 17-time risk factor. Are we speaking in terms of, here's my question, is this rate of child death, would it be the same whether this child was in the care of a parent or whether they were entrusted to the state? Is it simply because of a disability, or were there factors of abuse and neglect here?
So
you're recognized.
Thank you. So I'll refer to the chairman's example of kind of a baseline case where if you have a child with no physical disability versus a child with a physical disability, that their probability of something being very tragic happening, being raised by, I believe it's 17 times the physical disability indicator. We did not do any kind of breakout of parent versus non-parent, anything like that, but that's certainly something that we would want to explore moving forward.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you. This question is for Mr. DeGree. I think when you started, you mentioned that the cost of the study was $100,000 or so. What was that right?
You recognize?
Yes, $115,000.
Follow up.
And did that $115,000, did that require a separate appropriation, or did you take that out of your operations?
You recognize?
We took it out of our family safety contract funds that were already appropriated.
Recognized.
So the data that I'm interested in, you said that is available. Do you think that we could get that analysis and pay for it out of the same bucket of money, or do you need me to request a separate appropriations?
You're recognized.
I'd like to look carefully at our budget at this stage of the year, and I'm sure assuming we do have the funds, we could move ahead. I think the chair's caution was correct. I think we would have to go back to another competitive process because it would be a new contract. But, yeah, if we had the funds, we could certainly move ahead using family safety contracted funds.
Final follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. Since you have the contract, has that term of service for the contract already expired, or could you just do an amendment to the current contract?
You're recognized.
I believe it's expired, but I'd want to look at that before I give you a definite answer. I'd like to go back and look at that and look at the funding and get back to you on it.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to the very beginning when there's been numbers being thrown around, and you're the guys that probably know the answer to this. At a delegation meeting, we were discussing the number of deaths of children in the past month or something in April. There were 20, I mean, this one number of 20 deaths of children who were in the custody, not custody, but being overseen by DCF. Then the beginning number was mentioned was 800 deaths from 2007 on. I saw a chart with deaths of children who were being overseen by DCF, and they were large numbers every single year. It wasn't just 24 in this past April. Do you have those numbers of how many children have died who have been being overseen by DCF in the past year or 2 years? Actually, over the past few years. Is that something, I don't have it on the tip of your fingers, but something that you can give us?
Representative Schwartz, my guess is that they do not have those numbers directly at their fingertips. It may be further on in the total report that is, not just the kind of executive summary and a couple of slides. You may find that embedded further into the report, and I can speak to that. Otherwise, we can certainly reach out to the agency and give you a better comprehensive view of all that. And we're happy to reach out to them to be able to get that.
Can I make a comment also? Is that...
Sure, have at it.
Thank you. One of the things that happened in this chart that I had seen and is that I think it's just wonderful that we're going to be adding money to the
Child Protective Investigators and changing the system and being more protective of kids is great. But I really thought that this has been going on for a long time, that this is, you know, we don't just have a crisis this minute. We've had a crisis all these years, and we're finally looking at it. So I'd love to see what that is, what the statistics are in the past. And thank you.
Representative Schwartz, as usual, we'll make sure that we call that data from the agency, and we'll have staff distribute that back out to all the members uniformly that way. That way they're not speculating and not, you know, giving you a partial answer, but a complete answer there so that you get it all at one time. Members, any other questions? Okay, I would just say, first of all, members, if you have any questions about anything going on in general at DCF, please make sure that you avail yourself of our staff. Our staff analyst for DCF-related issues is William Fontaine, sitting down here. If you haven't gotten to know him over DCF, you should. Please avail yourself of his expertise. He's excellent at what he does. Members, as I see this through some initiative through the agency to start this process, they were able to call together three data sources that gives a more vivid picture than anything I've seen thus far related to this exceptionally important issue. Now, we have heard proposals from a lot of different folks, and I'm sure those folks have wandered into your office from time to time saying that if we build this mousetrap, that'll be the best thing that could ever happen and we can solve all issues. I would be willing to bet you that some of those things that are being talked about and ventured out do not hit on all these parameters. And I have to kind of ask myself, what would it be for a Child and Protective Investigator to have 24 databases at their disposal so when they show up to the door or when they get to the office in the morning, they know which kid to go see, and they know which door to knock on, and they know which line to save. So I don't know what we'll do this legislative session. I don't know how far we'll get or where we'll go down the road on this, but it certainly brings forward the power of just using good data. We like to make data-driven decisions here, and I think this certainly points to the power of that possibility. And so I thank you for your presentations today. Good work on a very difficult subject, and thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Members, any other questions, comments before the committee today? Okay, with that, our business is done, and Representative Hill moves.